Hello, everybody, and welcome back to We've Got Mail?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
This is the podcast where you control the conversation right here at the Critically Acclaimed Network. My name is William Bibbiani. Gosh darn it, I am a film critic. I write for The Wrap, and everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I am a senior staff writer over at Slash Film. For this particular podcast, you can address me as Rockmeister McCool.
Mm-hmm.
You needn't, but you may.
I need to get that monogrammed on something, like a kerchief.
Bowling jacket.
Yeah, just something. Just Rockmeister, like RM, I guess, would just be... Like if you killed someone and you left your handkerchief behind, it would say RM, and they would say, oh, this can't be Whitney Seibold, and then they listen to the podcast and like, wait a minute.
That's his alias.
That's his alias.
Oh, here's the deal, dear listeners, and to you, William, as
yes.
well. If I'm ever on the lam, I've been wrongly accused of a crime.
Sure.
And I can't,
wrongly.
And I can't... If I'm on the lam, it's probably a pretty serious crime, and I would like to think I don't commit very serious crimes. I'm certain.
No, you a little better than that.
Right? Yeah.
Moving on.
I certainly have my vices, but yeah. I'm not a criminal.
Okay.
If I have to like check into some sort of local motel to hide out, and I need an alias to check in, you know, I have to write something in the ledger, which I don't think anybody ever does in any motel anywhere anymore. But if I do. Look for Rockmeister McCool. Like that's if you're like the Arbogast going to the motel to look for me.
This is your Where's Waldo.
Yes.
It's a book with just you and various film critic environments, like you're at the Sundance Film Festival or you're at a big premiere and it's just you have to find Rockmeister McCool.
And it's just me, I'm just at the premiere.
I mean, right. Yeah, I mean, it's not just you. Otherwise, it would be kind of easy to find, but all right.
Let's read some letters.
This is the podcast where you control the conversation right here at the Critically Acclaimed Network. How it works is you send us a correspondence of some kind, and we respond. We answer your questions. We discuss whatever topics you want us to discuss. We listen to your criticism, because sometimes we're wrong. And here's the email. letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Once again, that is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. And sometimes we get cool postcards and things. Whitney, what is our PO Box?
Yeah, send us postcards or letters, whatever you like, to the Critically Acclaimed Network, PO Box 641-565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yeah, and we actually have some of those to start.
We do indeed. Yeah. We got two postcards from the same person.
Right.
So this is sort of a twofer. Now, because we get so few pieces of physical mail, we can still afford to read them all on this podcast.
Yeah, we don't always have a chance to read all of our emails, but until we get like a Miracle on 34th Street deluge, if you take the time to send us a physical piece of mail, we will read it on the air.
All right. So these are this one. One listener gets a twofer.
Yep.
A little extra bonus.
They put in the effort.
They put in the effort. They wrote. The first postcard. The image on it is it's two women. Mm-hmm. Laying on their backs in sort of like an oval-shaped pool. Oh, their heads are touching.
Oh, my God. That is a cool fucking postcard.
Yeah, it's a cool-looking poster.
That's beautiful.
And the caption says, what is it? Follow.
Follow. Cleanse sadness with water. Ease tension with sun. A recalibration of vibrancy. Follow the one who finds God in nature, where one is all and all is one. Well. Oh. It's a nice sentiment.
A poem there. And it comes from Shelley.
Hi, Shelley.
I can't tell if it's Shelley or Shelby because they just sort of.
Well, let me take a look.
It's like an autograph. But,
yeah. I also can't tell. So if it's Shelby, well, look at the other one. Maybe it's clearer there.
Yeah, it looks like Shelley to me. But hello, Shelley. Thanks for writing in. Hope all is well. Seems you all have been very busy lately. Oh, Shelby from Kentucky.
Got it.
It's a little more clear there.
Understood. Thank you. Sorry about the mix-up.
And we've read from Shelby before.
Yeah.
Wanted to say the artwork on these is not my own. Just felt you would enjoy it.
I do.
I have what might be a boring question. Who is Louis Despacito? He is an executive producer on every.
Marvel
property.
Yeah.
I have seen, but unlike Feige, I never hear the foibles or triumphs attributed to him. Sorry for a weird one, Shelby.
That's actually a good question. You know, a lot of people who a lot of people who have like executive producer credits or associate producer credits on a lot of these projects, a lot of them have their credit kind of grandfathered in. Because they were part of a project from the very beginning, or they were in on the ground floor of like a franchise. Like, I think
I know they signed a contract early on, so they're guaranteed a credit no matter how the film turns out.
Which is like how Avi Arad ended up on like every Spider-Man movie, even if he didn't actively produce it.
Right. Or which which producer of The Simpsons? Like, they left early on, but they kept getting credit.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
Even after their death, they kept getting credit.
Yeah, I don't
was
recall.
It Sam Simon?
I'd
have to look it up. One of the Simpsons producers has a deal that.
This is also something that happens in television. If you direct the first episode of a TV show, the pilot, I don't know if you always get a producer credit, but you get like a cut of the show, like kind of forever. Like you were in at the ground floor. You made it happen. So, you know, good for you. Kudos. And Louis Desposito, I actually met him once.
Oh, okay.
And I'm trying to remember, it was a long time ago. He worked on a lot of the there was a time when Marvel was first putting out their movies on home video. And in an effort to make them all feel like an event, a lot of them had cool special bonus features, and they had what was called the Marvel One Shot.
It was a short film. Yeah.
These were original short films, usually starring very minor characters from the movies, you know, actors you can get. And they would maybe fill out a little scene, like a little, just a little moment, like, oh, hey, how did that guy get from here to here? Boom. There was one with Agent Coulson, who would go on to star in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series. He was in the first several Avengers movies. That was just him driving to where Thor's hammer had landed on Earth, and he gets involved in like a liquor store robbery. We just get to see him. Okay. We just get to see him be heroic for a minute, and it was kind of cool. There was and sometimes they would use it to smooth over plot holes. If you recall, at the end of The Incredible Hulk, the Edward Norton movie, there was a post-credit sequence for that as well, and that post-credit sequence involved Tony Stark recruiting William Hurt's character to be a member of the Avengers, even though he was kind of the antagonist in that movie.
Yeah.
It was a weird kind of choice. I guess they hadn't really figured out how they were going to handle that. And they ended up not doing anything with that plot point. So eventually they did a short film of a couple of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. They've been given the assignment of recruiting Thaddeus Ross to the Avengers.
That's William Hurt's character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they don't want him in there. So how do we ask him while also annoying him so much that he'll say no? We'll get Tony to do it.
Oh, okay.
Pretty thin, but it smoothed it over. There was a nice one they had
I feel like when The Incredible Hulk came out, even though it has that Robert Downey Jr. cameo, there still wasn't like a solid plan for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh yeah, no. It was all wishes and dreams
like
at
the,
that point.
The plan didn't come into place until Iron Man 2. Iron Man and The Incredible Hulk were made before the plan was set, even though they were just taking what other filmmakers had laid down.
Yeah.
That the cameo with Samuel L. Jackson, Jon Favreau has said in interviews, that was just, there was like a wink to fans. It wasn't something that was ever intended to be taken anywhere.
Yeah. So I think he was, I think he's co-president of Marvel Studios, or he was for a while. He directed a couple of those. He directed two of the Marvel one-shots. He did the one about Agent Carter, and he did a pretty good one actually called Item 47, which was after the events of the first Avengers movie. There was all this alien tech lying around, and a couple of criminals just stumbled across some of it and went on a crime wave. And a couple of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents tracked them down. Fun idea. They ended up kind of stealing that or reusing that for the character of the Vulture in Spider-Man Homecoming. Yeah. So it's kind of the same premise.
And it was never a problem again.
Yeah. He also directed the pilot episode of Agent Carter, the series, which was a good show. He worked as like a first assistant director and a unit production manager on a lot of things. He worked on Demolition Man and a bunch of other movies.
So he's like a, not just an executive. He's like an actual filmmaker.
No, he's a hardworking guy, as near as I can tell. So, but it's just the thing with this industry, and I think On the outside looking in, it's easy to lose track of this. We know certain people in the industry. We know Kevin Feige. Uh-huh. If you follow Marvel Studios, he's been the face of it for 15 years now, mm-hmm. plus. And we know him. He does all the interviews.
He's the director, really, of most of these projects.
He's in charge. Mm-hmm. He's in charge. And we know the actors, and we know the directors, at least most of them. You can probably name a lot of them off the top of your head, even mm-hmm. if you don't follow the industry. There's so many people who keep that thing going mm-hmm. who are not famous, not by any conventional measure.
Yeah.
And they're doing a lot of hard work, and a lot of them are really good at their jobs, and you will never see an interview with them, or you will never get to know them, or you will never see them on a bubble on a baseball card, which they have from Marvel. Well, I guess they would, didn't they? They used to have, like, but not even like the MCU.
Stan Lee has his own trading card.
He should in
one of those.
Yeah, and so should everyone else who created those who created that stuff with him, who sometimes get kind of overlooked. But anyway, I digress. My point is, there's a lot of people who don't get all the credit who are still keeping things running. And as my understanding, Lou Desposito has done a lot of work.
Well, that's the way Marvel Comics operated. Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Saw himself as the face of the company, so when another artist created a character, it kind of belonged to the company, so by extension, it kind of belonged to him as well, so he would always say, Stan Lee Presents, and it sounded a lot like he invented the character, and he was okay with people being misled a little bit.
And early on in like the Spider-Man Fantastic Four era, like the Silver Age of Marvel Comics, he was on the ground floor of a lot of those characters.
Well, a lot of those characters.
Created or co-created, mostly co-created.
Yeah. But what's but really frustrating...
Later on, you just got lumped in.
It's just been one of the more frustrating things about the sort of wave of the decade that we enjoyed of Marvel ascendancy was that the creators of these characters and the original artists didn't have their names in big lights up at the beginning. Like, Thanos created by Jim Starlin. That kind of stuff.
And because of the contract that they had with Marvel, which was work for hire, you create something, we own it, they got jack shit.
Mm.
They get next to nothing. That you can create... The guy, Ed Brubaker, for example, he co-created the Winter Soldier. Bucky was a long-standing character, but he invented the idea that he'd become the Winter Soldier, and he'd been like part of this Cold War agent who was brought out of cryogenic... And became an enemy of Captain America. All that stuff.
Was he cryogenically frozen? Is that how he's alive?
That's how he hadn't aged much. They put him in cryogenic freezing, and then they brought him out for a mission, and then they put him back.
They didn't show that in the movies.
It's implied, but they didn't really get into it. But that was why he hadn't aged.
I need to see his pod. We didn't see his pod.
Yeah.
I want to see his cryopod.
Yeah, in the comics, because Bucky actually died when he was like younger, when he was like a teenager, he did age a bit. You know, but I digress. Point is, that movie wouldn't exist without Ed Brubaker and a few other people. Granted, I'm just pointing out Ed Brubaker because he's been kind of vocal about this. Ed Brubaker has a small cameo in that movie. He plays like a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
He said he makes more money from that cameo than he did for creating the Winter Soldier.
I believe it. Yeah,
I believe that too. Well, and that's fucked up. And some people say that's the contract they signed. It's a predatory contract.
Yeah,
you don't have to side with the company. The company is fucking these people over.
Yeah, well, and that's true in a lot of angles of show business. I learned that this is a bit of a name droppy story, but my family knows in a tangential way Nancy Cartwright, the voice of Bart Simpson.
Yeah,
and many others besides, but Bart Simpson's been the bulk of her career.
What she's best known for, yeah.
She also played a character on Fantastic Max. Remember the heroic sci-fi baby cartoon? Not Mighty Max.
Okay, I was about to say, because I was confused with Mighty Max. I do remember the heroic baby cartoon, because he had that, like, kind of building block robot who was, his butler.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't to remember that.
There was a little green alien. Mm-hmm. Nancy Cartwright played the little green alien.
Right. I'm so glad.
I paid attention because, like I said, our family kind of knew Nancy Cartwright.
Yeah.
And she also, very briefly, had a contract with Butterfinger candies.
Oh yeah, better don't like, nobody better lay a finger on my Butterfinger.
That's right. Yeah. The Simpsons were licensed for those Butterfinger ads, and the actors, some of the actors, were hired to reprise their roles.
Yeah, it was
for the commercials.
It was kind of like the Fruity Pebbles commercials where someone was trying to get Bart's Butterfinger, and he, you know, he was always too clever, and Homer didn't get the Butterfinger.
It was an ad campaign.
Yeah, if you didn't remember it, that's what it was.
Nancy Cartwright revealed that she makes quite a bit more voicing those commercials than she did for just doing the show itself.
Still?
Well, not anymore.
Okay, but I would hope
this,
not.
This was like, at the time. I haven't...
After like 30 goddamn years, you better be...
I haven't talked to Nancy Cartwright in quite a number of years.
But I'm sure that was true for a while.
I had an interaction with her, and she explained
that
to me.
I'm sure that was true for a while, So anyway, well spotted.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for asking. I wish we were a little bit more concrete about it, but I think I interviewed him once, actually, Louis Esposito, Desposito, and... Seemed like a reasonably cool dude.
I would love to interview these people now.
Yeah.
Now that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is dead, like it's pretty much gone.
Dead, but I feel like
been on the downward slope for quite a while. It's not coming back.
There's a time when a movie is let's just say it's one movie. Let's just say I remember when Forces of Nature came out with Sandra Bullock and Ben Affleck, and it's a completely forgettable romantic comedy starring Sandra Bullock and Ben Affleck in like the early
or something. Yeah,
very late '90s, very early 2000s. I don't recall. Anyway, but They were doing, you know, the press junkets and everything, and of course they spoke very, very highly of the movie, and then like a couple of years later, when they're no longer contractually obligated to promote the film, they were allowed to say, it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
You're allowed to say that after a while, and I just feel like because these franchises are so perpetual, we're not getting to that point where someone is finally allowed to say, look, making Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was an absolute fucking nightmare.
Well, occasionally, like,
or whatever, you know.
Occasionally, we do. Anthony Mackie has been pretty frank about how people aren't coming to see an Anthony Mackie movie.
Right.
Like, I'm kind of a face of this sort of corporate entity. Karen Gillan has revealed how little she gets paid to play Nebula in these movies.
I interviewed Rene Russo once, and I forget what we were talking. I think it was for Nightcrawler, and we were talking about, like, well, you know, you're in those Thor movies. He got paid. And she was like, ha! No. She laughed out. And Rene Russo has one of the great all-time laughs. Just this absolutely infectious, happy laugh. And she was laughing about how she doesn't get paid for the Thor films.
No.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Get a nickel in the mail every couple of months.
Yeah. So anyway, but we should move on. But thank you for that question. Yeah, we got another one from you.
Another one from Shelby. This is another postcard. On the front it says, when no one is around you, love will always find you.
That's nice.
And it's a painting of a woman reclined in a field. She's wearing sort of a diaphanous nightgown and looking completely blissed out in the grass.
Oh, she does look completely blissed out. That sounds like a nice day.
Yes.
And so you just pop some edibles. Well, not just. It takes like half an hour, but
They just hit. That's the
That's the point. It's like, okay, I'm not getting up.
It says, gentlemen, I wanted to bring up two shows that I recently thought, those would be fun for Cancel Too Soon. But then I realized both have two seasons, so I thought I would bring them up. Maybe you two would have heard them or seen them, or might have just find it neat to look up synopses and actors. So here they are, The Riches and Space Cases.
I don't recall Space Cases. I remember The Riches. Wasn't that one with Eddie Izzard, or Susie Eddie Izzard, and Minnie Driver? Are they like con artists pretending to be rich?
Yeah. And they were like squatting in a mansion or something. Like,
I
saw a little bit of that.
I'll watch anything Izzard does. Yeah. I've just always been a huge fan. But I watched a little bit of that. But I never quite got into it. But what was Space?
Space Cases was from Nickelodeon. And it, I want to see this now.
What is it?
Created by Bill Mumy
of
Barnes & Barnes and Peter David, the sci-fi author.
Oh, my God.
Peter David and Bill Mumy. Bill Mumy, who also starred in Lost in Space.
Oh, yeah. He was
Will Robinson. He was the boy.
If you ever saw that classic episode of The Twilight Zone about the creepy kid who sends people into the cornfield because he has godlike powers, also Bill Mumy.
It was on Party Like It's the 90s specials. It was on the new Splat Block.
Oh, Jewel State was in it. Oh, my God.
They reused props from Are You Afraid of the Dark?
That makes sense.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of those shows did that thing. The series featured a multitude of celebrity guest stars. I'm just reading from
sure.
online here. But George Takei, Mark Hamill, Bill Mumy, Katie Sagal, Michelle Trachtenberg, Danny Tamborelli, and Robin Leach all turned up on this show.
That's a hell of a cast. I do not remember this at all. I think I heard about it a little bit.
A group of misfit students and two adults are stranded far from home on an alien ship. Their attempts to journey back to see many dangerous... So it's a Lost in Space kind of a thing.
Great. That's a fun idea. Mm. I love it. Yeah, I do not know that one. I apologize, but I remember The Riches a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I really want to see... Because this is, like, right in that sweet... 96.
Yeah.
It's like... A lot of, like, 90s sci-fi TV has been very interesting to us.
The two-season show is the bane of our existence on Cancel Too Soon.
Yeah, because we just can't touch it.
We had to cut it off somewhere. Mm. You know, we can't... Otherwise, where's the line? So we have a hard line, and we fudged it a little. Like, maybe there was, like, a follow-up later. Or like, you know, Manimal did once appear on Nightman, and so we mentioned that, too. But... Generally speaking, it's pretty hard and fast roll. But there's a lot of shows I would love to cover on Cancel Too Soon, but they had two seasons. Like, I would love to cover Murder One. That was one of my favorite shows for many, many years. Still is, I guess. I haven't rewatched it in a while. But just an absolutely incredible, like, serialized court show where instead of, like, Law and Order, where it's a different case every week, it's one case throughout the entire season. And it was really good. It was exceptionally well written. So there was that. I was just talking to someone, they were disappointed that I didn't watch the HBO reboot of Perry Mason.
Okay.
And that had two seasons, and so I've watched a little bit of that. I don't have a lot of free time right now, but, you know, when I do, I sometimes try to watch something I don't have to watch for work. And that show is very good.
Okay.
Kudos to, I've seen like the first half of season one. It is a very good show. I will grant you that, but we're not going to do it on Cancel Too Soon. But thank you for asking.
Yeah. I'm just looking more at this show, and it sounds really, really great.
Sounds like something we would enjoy reviewing.
A show I've always wanted to do on Cancel Too Soon, which we haven't been able to because it hasn't been available, is finally on YouTube, of all places.
Which is?
Likely Suspects is a show.
Oh, the whole thing on YouTube?
The whole thing is on YouTube.
Oh, that's great. We need to do that.
Likely Suspects, the gimmick with that show was... It was a semi-comedic detective show. It was a murder mystery show, but the star of the show was you.
Yeah.
It was all told in this first-person perspective, and you, the viewer, were supposed to be like the rookie helping the main detective.
Yeah.
And something you did always cracked the case in some way.
Ah. Like, I'm so good at this.
Yeah. So it's like, and yeah, they just turn to the camera at the end. It's like, good job, rookie.
Yeah.
And I like the show because the murders were so unusual. Like, I'm going to cook somebody alive in a sauna. one of the murders was somebody's perfume was laced with meat flavoring and they were fed to Dobermans. Like, that kind of stuff. It's not like
it's fun.
Shot, killed, stabbed, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, anyone can do that.
No, I want to see somebody get cooked in a sauna.
I the other show I watched a little bit of lately is Elsbeth.
Also like a kooky detective.
Yeah, right? Apparently it's like this spinoff of The Good Wife, and she was like on it for a long time, and then they just said, fuck it, now she's Columbo. So it's basically a Columbo reboot, but she's fucking adorable. And all of the crimes, and it's just, I love Columbo, and I love Elspeth, because it's like, usually when people commit a crime, it's like a crime of passion. Or just very suddenly. And no one ever goes to the effort of, like, trying to get away with it anymore. Or if you do, it's just because you got a lawyer. It's not like, I timed out this murder perfectly. I know exactly when they're going to be in the museum and when they're going to be in the alleyway in the museum for 30 seconds. I had to create an alibi for myself for those 30 seconds, and there was one tiny hole in my plan that maybe someone will figure out. That's the good stuff. Like, if you have to commit murder, don't. But if you had to, you know, make a day of it, you know, like, really
put some effort in.
Yeah, right. What are we even doing here sometimes? So, like, when they're always like, oh, we got to cover our tracks, and I wrapped his head in this special paper that dissolves in water in just 2 minutes, so we'll never know how he got suffocated. And I'm like, ha, Keegan-Michael Key, you genius. You really thought it out, man. All the murderers are always guest stars. It's great. Yeah. Anyway. But we should move on.
We got another letter. Ooh. Not a postcard.
Actual
crinkle it. Because
piece of paper.
What is it? ASMR? AMSR?
ASMR. A little bit. Don't ask me what the acronym is for. I never remember off the top of my head.
Audio Sonic.
No.
Mister.
You're already screwed up.
It's a letter from Nolan.
Hi, Nolan.
Hi, Nolan. Dear Billy Bibbs and the Cyb Dog.
Nice.
That's us. Let's play a game. Oh, wait. Let's play a game.
Nice.
I'm going to give you a generic title for a non-existent movie, a decade for it to have released in, and two actors to star in it. Your job is to come up with a quick elevator pitch for what you think the movie would be about.
That's fine.
You can each make your own pitch or whatever, whichever you... or work together, whichever you prefer. Also, I know that many movie titles have already been used at one point or another, so if I name a title that's the same as an existing movie, please just do me a favor and let it slide.
Okay.
So there's five titles here.
Oh, do you have to do all five? Oh my God. Okay, well, we'll try to make it quick.
All right. Film number one, Eyes and Ears, from the 1990s, stars Billy Crystal and Damon Wayans.
Okay, Eyes and Ears. Billy Crystal and Damon Wayans are mismatched guys. They don't like each other. They hate each other. They got off on the wrong foot. But they both, I don't know, were they cursed or fall into like some kind of lab experiment? You decide that.
Lab experiment.
Okay. Billy Crystal can only hear through, was it Damon Wayans?
Damon Wayans.
Billy Crystal can only hear through Damon Wayans' ears, and Damon Wayans can only see through Billy Crystal's eyes.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. All right. I'm not sure how we get comedy out of that, but I'm sure those are clever guys. They can make it work.
You know, put them in like, I have to go to a job interview, or, I'm going to be intimate with my wife, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just make it really a... really awkward for them both.
It's a bit forced, but it's fine. Okay. What do you want for 5 seconds?
I was thinking there is a movie called See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Yeah, I was thinking about that one.
Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder, where...
they witnessed a murder, but one of them is deaf and one of them is blind, so they only got part of it.
So they each have a piece of it and they can fill in each other. I remember liking it, but I haven't seen it since the theaters.
I wonder
in the late
80s. If that one's aged badly.
Maybe so.
You know, with disability representation. I cannot say. I haven't seen it in 30 years now, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Number two, Rolling with the Brunches. From the 2010s.
I hate to break it to you, but that is taken. No.
Starring Emma Stone and Reese Witherspoon. Right. It is, it's sort of like same time next year. They have a brunch every year on the same day. Hmm. And we get to sort of hear Emma Stone and Reese Witherspoon talk about sort of their relationships a little bit and how their relationships aren't going so well.
That's cute.
And by the end of the movie, they've traded lovers without realizing it.
Every scene is a brunch, but it's every a year has passed.
Yes.
I like that.
Okay.
It's actually like a pretty good idea. Yeah, I like that.
All right.
That's good. And the cool thing is you get to see like how like the restaurant changes too.
There you go.
And like the same waiter is there and you film it. You have to film it like Boyhood. You do it like every year. This is good actually. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got?
Is Javier still working? Mm. Yeah, that kind of thing. Number three, Pirates of City Hall, 2000s, starring Aaron Eckhart and Natalie Portman.
That
could be a romantic comedy or like a really intense drama.
It could be really intense drama. It could be romantic comedy. It's probably not about real pirates. Mm-hmm. I imagine I'm going to go with a dark comedy.
Okay.
It was Aaron Eckhart and who?
And Natalie Portman.
And Natalie Portman. Yeah, it is a dark kind of, and I realize I'm going with this because it's Aaron Eckhart, but a kind of a thank you for smoking kind of vibe.
Okay.
And it is about the hilarious foibles of being corrupt in modern America. And how it's, because you remember like all these like corruption scandals would come out and it turns out that Rudy Giuliani just like said, hey, I'm doing this crime right now. Yeah. And remember when like he accidentally butt dialed the FBI?
Yeah.
Like that's an actual thing that happened.
How are these people just not in jail?
Because they're rich and white, dude.
Yeah, I know.
At least they took away Rudy's money.
I always wanted to write a screenplay about just some beat cop who's out on the street and he sees like somebody drive through a stop sign. And he pulls him over and pulls him out of the car and starts strip searching him, and it's the president. And he doesn't realize it's the president.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because the president would do that.
Well, the president is up to something incredibly shady in this universe.
That's like, right. He ditched his detail so he could have an affair or meet clandestinely with a foreign power.
Exactly. Like,
I get it.
To something, and this one beat cop who has like no authority like knows the truth, and nobody will let him... enact the law.
I've heard worse ideas. We got a few more. What do you got?
The other one. Number four, Spilled Milk from the 1980s, starring Burt Reynolds and Sigourney Weaver.
Ooh.
Sigourney Weaver. So it'd have to be late 80s, because Sigourney Weaver, like...
No, she was starring in movies in the early 80s.
No, her first feature Aliens in 86?
No, her first feature was Alien in 79.
Oh, that's right, 79.
Also, that wasn't her first feature, but it was her first starring role. She was in a couple of thrillers in the early 80s. Mm. Like Eyewitness, I think, was one of them. Mm. And by like the late 80s, she was in Working Girl and Gorillas in the Mist. But yeah. she was still doing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
She would be a plausible co-star for a Burt Reynolds vehicle in like the early 80s.
Yeah. Spilled Milk. That makes me think it's sort of like a James L. Brooks type adult drama, like adult drama comedy, about sort of the affairs and difficulties of people like in the dairy industry.
Taking that real literally.
Yeah.
I would imagine it is sort of a relationship foibles thing, but in my head, because it's Burt Reynolds in the 80s, it co-stars Dom DeLuise. So it's got a much wackier... It's got a much wackier... And Sigourney Weaver is much more of the straight actor who's like just sort of Burt and Dom are bouncing off of, but of course she'll end up with Burt, even though they hate each other and don't actually buy it very much. That's the Burt Reynolds way.
And number five, this is the last one, Mental Health Day. From the 2020s, okay. So it's a 20s recent film, with Paul Walter Hauser and Jason Bateman.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so they're brothers.
They're brothers, yeah.
Jason Bateman is a workaholic.
Okay.
And Paul Walter Hauser is his shiftless layabout, much younger brother.
No, you know what? Flip it. Have him Flip play it. Against type.
Okay, so Paul Walter Hauser is a workaholic, and Jason Bateman is like the slacker who never really made anything of himself, but... Paul Walter Hauser is approaching dangerous levels of burnout, and Jason Bateman has to, like, kidnap him to give him a mental health day.
Yeah.
But what he doesn't realize is that this is the absolute worst day to do that, and he absolutely has to get back to the office or the company will go under.
Ooh, how about, there's something even more at stake. How about Paul Walter Hauser is, like, a government worker? And he's, or is that too much?
You run the risk of getting it into, like, there's, like, some kind of... espionage thriller element that feels more tacked on, but if he was like working for like the EPA or something, that might make more sense. But he's got to have a high pressure job.
Yeah,
that is requires him to be on call all the time, or so he thinks.
Okay,
and he hasn't taken a sick day or a vacation day in 20 years, and his brother is forcing him to do it against his will.
Okay,
it's not bad. Give us the money.
These things that were literally just like pulling out of the air. It's better than some movies I've seen.
Honestly, they're not bad.
There's a book out there. It's just called Monster, which is about the making of a late 90s film that nobody talks about because nobody cares, called Up Close and Personal.
With Michelle Pfeiffer
and Robert Redford.
Yeah, yeah. It was nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song with a Celine Dion number, which is pretty good, actually.
You wouldn't think anything about that movie, but this book, Monster, kind of traces the entire production from earliest conception to, like, the hundreds of rewrites that it went through, and it just sort of is this good examination of the Hollywood machine and how everything is just developed to hell, and the movie that you see on the screen is often very different from what it started as.
Yeah.
So a lot of these screenplays probably started the same way we just did it. We just sort of pull out a fun idea, we start to develop it, we come up with kind of a basic structure, like a plot, and we bring it to a studio. And the studio, of course, needs their input.
They have to justify why they have a job, so it needs to have a baseball scene.
Exactly.
And then I can always point to the baseball scene and say, that one was mine.
And then that screenplay gets thrown out, but the project is still, like, under contract, so they have to, like, rewrite it from the start again with a new star and new screenwriters. It goes through all these drafts. By the time it makes it to the big screen, it's totally different.
Yeah.
The movie The Player was supposed to be the most cynical version of that. And the cynical movie, like the sellout movie that they show at the end of The Player that shows that everything has just fallen apart, that everything is shallow and horrible in Hollywood, is now like prestige pictures compared to what we have today.
Yeah, no, it's pretty bad. Yeah.
Anyway, the letter ends. I hope you guys had as much fun playing this as I had writing it. If it wasn't a complete dud, maybe you can do it again someday.
Well,
if
someone
it
else...
sucked, then let us never speak of it again. Thanks for taking the time, Nolan.
Our listeners are going to have to tell us whether or not that was a dud.
Yeah. Were you amused by our pitches?
That was fun. If anyone wants to do that again, if anyone wants to send us more of those, that could be a fun little exercise, but obviously it's not the whole show. But we have some emails. We can delve into now. Whitney's bringing those up. Takes up a second. I'm just going to vamp for a sec.
Hang on.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers.
All right.
Unique New York.
This is an article. This is a letter from Eric. Hello, Eric. Gentle beings, at a recent community event where my bike group was hosting a bike valet, we got to talking about what we've got. We've named the Bike Del Test for movies and TV.
I love our listeners so much. I love our listeners. Bike Del Test.
Can you think of a movie or TV show that fits our criteria for the Bike Del Test? It's an American-made fictional narrative or TV movie where a major character rides a bicycle from point A to point B, and one, is not a movie about bikes, i.e. Breaking Away.
Yeah.
The person is an adult, so it can't be E.T.
Mm-hmm.
The ride does not end with an accident, comical or otherwise, or facilitate a meet-cute, so it can't be like Beetlejuice, where somebody crashes a bike and they meet somebody.
Okay, all right.
And four, the person who rides a bike cannot be quirky or eccentric a la Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Okay.
We could not think of an example that fit all the criteria. In defense, I pointed out that everyone we know rides bikes is eccentric in our own way, so maybe the stereotype is correct. We could think of a few more non-American productions set overseas where it's shown simply as transportation, but no American examples, hence the no American rule.
Right, because the bicycle thief, for example.
With your extensive and diverse knowledge of movies and TV shows, I turn to you for an example. Help me, Bibbs Juan Whitney, you are our only hope. Thanks in advance, Eric.
Does Premium Rush count?
I would say so. Some of those rides end in... Well, but that's bike-centric.
It is, but it's not about a bike.
They said the movie can't be about bikes, and that is about bike messengers. So I think Premium Rush is off the table. All right.
That's fair. That's fair.
That said, please watch the movie Premium Rush because it's great.
It's so much fun. Oh my God.
I was so happy when that came out.
Oh, it's bliss. I think I called it the best movie of that year.
Yeah.
I know that the year Avengers came out. People were kind of mad at me, but like, no, dude. Premium Rush is that good.
Premium Rush is so much more enjoyable than that Avengers movie.
I'm trying to think of like just movies where people incidentally have bicycles. Like the one that comes to mind, which is, I guess he's quirky though, is the 40-year-old virgin. He rides a bike.
Oh, there you go.
But he is quirky though.
That's true.
Yeah. So
In the movie It, there's It Part 2 specifically, the Killer Clown movie. One of the characters finds his old childhood bicycle, and there's a flashback to when he rode it, and that's just the way he gets around town.
Yeah.
Like, that. There's nothing strange about that.
You know who, it's not a big part of the movie or anything, but you know who rides a bicycle in a movie and it's incidental?
Hmm.
Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Kline, at the beginning of Dave, the movie where he happens to look exactly like the President of the United States, and then the President of the United States has a health... thing, and he ends up in a coma, and rather than give the vice president power, they decide to impersonate the president with a guy they can control.
Yeah.
Really good movie, actually. But yeah, he rides a bike kind of incidentally. Yeah. Does Jeff Goldblum ride a bike in Independence Day? I think he does.
I think he might. I'm in Some Like It Hot, there's the scene where Tony Curtis has to like do a quick change from playing in the band to like getting to the yacht so he can meet Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
And there's the scene where he has to ride a bike down there and he's wearing the earrings still.
Okay.
He just uses that as transportation.
Something
that always bugs me in movies, I've seen this a couple of times, when somebody arrives at their destination, they get off their bike and they just let it fall to the sidewalk and they just leave it there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, that's not a bikes can be injured like that.
bike can be injured like that, and some, I live in LA, somebody's going to take that thing.
Yeah.
In well, 30 seconds.
I think the idea is, you know, you the bike isn't as important as getting to the airport before the woman you love is going to leave your life forever.
Kind fuck of that. I ride nice bikes, you know?
Oh, God. Have you ever accidentally knocked over, like, bikes like a domino effect?
No.
I didn't think that really happened.
Oh no!
But one day,
oh no!
I was going to, it was a special. I'm trying to remember if it was like a birthday or an anniversary or something like that. But Mitch, my partner, he has his favorite cake. It's like only one like place in like the west side of Los Angeles makes it. So I went to get that cake, and as I was swinging the box, as I walked past a cafe, I lightly grazed the bicycle. Crash, 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 crash.
No.
Everyone looked at me, and I was like, ah, thank God it wasn't like tough guy motorcycles, because I don't think I would have survived that encounter.
Yeah.
Everyone was cool, it was fine, but I was like, I realized at that moment, sitcoms are not an exaggeration. There comes a point where you just start living in one of those fuckers. Mm. Oh my God. But I think the thing that is bringing up here, and this is why the corollary to the Bechdel test, even though it's not as, you know, sort of sociopolitically charged, is significant, is that the Bechdel test, if you're unfamiliar with it, it's basically in a movie, are there roles for women, multiple roles for women, characters with names, do they interact with each other? And when they do they talk about something other than men, specifically the male characters? And a shockingly few number of movies actually do that. And
so-called by author Alison Bechdel, who came up with it.
Yeah, she put it in one of her comics.
Dykes to Watch Out For.
Yeah, that was it. And the thing is that that's not really like there are good even feminist movies that don't pass the Bechdel test and vice versa. But it calls attention to what we kind of put in movies without thinking about it, or what we leave out of movies without thinking about it. And when it comes to bicycles, they're not the default mode of transportation in most movies. Mm. So if someone does have a bicycle, it's usually kind of noteworthy. Like, oh, that's the guy who rides a bicycle.
Well, a lot of people ride bicycles. I think the issue is in movies, like transportation is a fantasy in most movies.
Mm-hmm.
You just get there.
Leave a building and all of a sudden you're in a new building. Yeah,
It's a cliche when, you know, people are able to drive up and like park right in front of the building they're going to. Mm-hmm. And they just get out and rush in and, you know, draw their gun and go after the bad guy, whatever they're doing.
You remember Gun Crazy?
Oh, I love Gun Crazy.
Gun Crazy is a like late 40s, early 50s film noir. And they did a bank heist scene where like the camera's on the backseat of a car and the two people are going to pull the heist are driving to the bank. And it's all one shot. And they get to the bank, but they can't find parking, so they have to go around the block. That was not in the script. They literally didn't like set aside a parking spot for them. And that's just an actual thing that happened on the day. And it's great. It's so suspenseful. It's like, oh my God, that is totally a thing that would happen.
One of my favorite twists on that was in the remake of The Italian Job, where they're doing heists like in these sexy locations.
Sure.
You get to go around in Europe and do our heists.
But
then they go to Los Angeles and they say, okay, we're going to do a heist in Los Angeles. And they tell the driver, it's like, okay, we're going to pick up the loot here and we're going to meet over here. We need you to time it, like hit a stopwatch.
Oh, yeah.
And time how long it takes you to get from this place in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So it's like, we cut to these people. It's like, we're organizing it. Things aren't going so well. How are we going to do this heist? We cut back to the driver and he's on Santa Monica Boulevard in stopped traffic.
Yeah.
Looking at his stopwatch. Just it's ticking up and ticking up. It's like, okay, how long did it take you? Took me about an hour and a half. Like, they expect him to be, like, 8 minutes or something.
Yeah, no. Like, in L.A., unless you're going in a very specific direction at a very specific time of day, like, if you're going north on the 405 anytime between 3 o'clock and 7:30, you're fucked. If you're going south, you can actually make it. But on north at that time, you're just totally fucked.
I'm convinced that cars aren't built. They just sort of rise up out of the concrete on the 405 freeway here in Los Angeles. Just that's where they just manifest there.
Yeah. Anyway, we should move on. But that's a good one. If anyone thinks of any that we didn't, because frankly, we didn't think of very many, please let us know.
Yeah. Here's a letter from Brandon.
Hi, Brandon. What you got?
Sorry, had a little bit of a hiccup there. Greetings, Bibbs and Whitney. I wanted to start this letter by saying thank you for a pretty incredible movie recommendation.
Oh.
A while back ago, on one of your podcasts, the two of you discussed 1986's The Name of the Rose.
Oh, yeah.
With Sean Connery and Christian Slater.
That was an episode of The Iron List. What was it?
I think it was the medieval movies. The medieval movies.
Those
murder mystery investigated by medieval monks in a monastery.
Really good movie. Yeah,
based on an Umberto Eco novel.
Yeah.
I never heard of this movie, but your discussion made me want to watch it. And after seeing Conclave this weekend, it seemed like that'd be a good double feature. So I put it on, and I really, really enjoy it. That would be a good double feature.
It's a really good one.
Conclave. Conclave is a really good thriller, by the way.
It really is.
I like that movie a lot.
I liked it a lot, too.
I watched the movie on Amazon Prime, and there was a part about midway through where I noticed some awkward editing, as if something had been taken out.
Mm.
Sure enough, after the movie was over, I looked it up, and Amazon Prime's video version of the film had a sex scene removed from the film.
No! Yeah. Oh, Chris, fuck you.
Christian, and I saw it with the sex scene.
I saw it with the sex scene, too. I don't think I saw it on Amazon, though, but I did... I did watch it.
I saw it on, like, VHS back in the day.
Yeah, I watched it specifically for that podcast, but I definitely didn't watch it on Amazon Prime. I'm trying to remember what I watched it on, but yeah, no, that fucking sucks.
Like, did you see the sex scene?
I did see the sex scene. It was in there, yeah.
All right. Upon further research, it appears that there were different cuts of the movie floating around before streaming was a theme. Some with the sex scene and others that had it removed to comply with, quote, local laws. Yeah. I can understand that Prime Video may have only had access or rights to stream the censored cut, but then to make matters more confusing, I found the full version of the movie that includes the sex scene, and it's available to watch on Tubi.
That's where I watched it. Yeah.
You watched it on Tubi.
Yeah, I watched
it
on Tubi, yeah.
I'm wondering if you two have encountered anything like this before, a censored version of a movie on a streaming service.
Oh, yeah.
I find it a little strange that there was no warning about this whatsoever. I can understand if the movie opens with a title card saying, we only have this version available at this time, which has a pivotal scene removed, but there was no such thing.
Yeah.
Audiences who don't know that a scene has been removed from the movie will likely be confused, given that it actually makes a difference to one of the subplots.
Yeah.
You guys rock. Thanks for all you do, Brandon.
This is unfortunately quite common. It's not the norm, thank God. But it's really not unheard of.
It was really common, and this was confirmed at Blockbuster Video back in the day.
Yeah.
Blockbuster,
I bet people tell me this is not true, but I'm like, dude, I fucking saw it.
No, it's true. I've witnessed
movies.
This. Yeah. I can't remember
this. This is not a Mandela effect. I was there.
I can't remember the title of the film, but I rented a horror movie from Blockbuster Video, and I watched it, and there was a scene where a librarian was attacked by a monster. But we didn't see the monster. It was cut really weird.
Hmm.
And the way it was cut in the movie, the librarian was simply, like, the monster was afoot, and she was just sort of doing her job, and she was putting some books away. Hmm. And then there was this hard cut, and she was, like, flying, through a bookcase, already having, like, been attacked. She had, like, her clothes were ripped, and she had, like, cuts and things.
Yeah.
And clearly something had been cut, like, from that. And we looked it up, and sure enough, so that version we saw was shorter than the version that we had read about on the Internet Movie Database.
Mm.
And this was an example of what Blockbuster did. They found films that had objectionable violence, mostly sexual content, and they would edit it out without anybody's consent. And they would put it on their shelves.
Yeah.
Now, Blockbuster was able to get away with this with certain B filmmakers. And this is an insight I can have because I was an intern for Roger Corman.
Because
he did a lot of sort of B-grade, softcore smut movies.
Which was very big in the early days of home video in the 80s and 90s in particular.
Because,
you wanted smut, but you didn't want to go to a porn shop, or you couldn't because it wasn't one in your neighborhood. So you would get a sleazy erotic thriller or a sexy bikini car wash company kind of comedy.
They have titles like Sensual Desires, and those movies did big business at Blockbuster because Blockbuster didn't carry pornography. You couldn't go there and rent an adult feature. You could get these sort of nudity laced things, and each time Roger Corman put one of these out, he put out two versions because, depending on the market, some of them were a lot stricter about sexual content. One was slightly shorter, had a lot of the sexy scenes removed, and this was really hilarious. The cover was a little different, the video box.
Huh.
Where I remember one, it was, and a lot of these started like Shannon Tweed or Maria Ford, and they were like standing there in sort of like something really skimpy. And in one, there was like this really obvious airbrushed like ribbon across the nudie bits. And in the more like, the more sexy version, that ribbon was removed.
Yeah.
And Blockbuster would only carry like the more censored version. Sometimes you can find one that has the less censored version.
Right.
Blockbuster did that all the time.
Yeah.
They took out sex scenes.
But
now when it comes to...
Yeah.
The problem with streaming is a lot of the streaming services are very carefully curated. You go to something like Shudder, that's really carefully curated. They know which versions they get, and they know what movies they're choosing.
They care. Amazon will just put on whatever the fuck it is. It's just shovelware, basically.
Yeah, they're going to the bulk bar and scooping movies into a big bin.
And there are people who like just upload movies on there, and you'll see like, oh, here's because Nosferatu's in public domain. So here's Nosferatu with an AI thumbnail.
Yeah.
Because that's going to sell it.
Look, I don't know what's going to... And there's like four different versions. You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And I think when these streaming services pick up a movie, they don't care which version they grab.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have easily gotten the less sexy Shannon Tweed movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they were presented with the less or the more sexy, they weren't discerning. They just grab whatever was in front of them.
There have been actual situations where like a movie has been uploaded and there have been like censored dialogue and people have been really, really angry about it. And it had turned out that... by mistake in this particular instance. I'm trying to remember exactly what the movie was for, but they had uploaded the airplane safe version.
Oh, which is like really heavily censored.
Well, yeah, a lot of times if you see a movie on an airplane, if there's like what's got like really adult content, they will blur it or whatever, and they just want to make sure the kids don't accidentally see it and people get offended because it's available in their chair. And I think that's bullshit, but it is a thing that exists.
Well, back in the day, they would lower a screen so the whole plane could
exactly.
see it. Yeah.
And so that was a big issue as well. Safe for TV versions as well, because network television and basic cable, you can't show everything. And so there would be censored versions of those that, well, they still have that version and it just got uploaded. However... That is potentially an honest mistake. There are also situations in which it is done extremely on purpose and new. When Disney Plus first came out, the movie Splash was on there.
That's right.
Splash.
Oh, this is such nonsense.
Ron Howard directed a romantic comedy in the early 80s. It was a huge hit, starring Tom Hanks and Daryl Hannah. She's a mermaid. He falls in love with her. It's wacky. Huge hit. You know the Splash Mountain, the thing they just like changed, like did a whole new reskin for? The reason it's called Splash Mountain is because Splash was a hit. It doesn't have anything to do with the ride. It's just the name recognition was really good for a while, and now people don't even make that connection. People just think it's because it splashes. But there's a scene in that movie where Daryl Hannah like runs off into the ocean, and you can just see just a little bit of her bare bottom. Like she's got long hair and she's kind of covers a little bit, but you can see her butt.
She's in the nude, yeah.
For a brief shot, or part of a shot.
It's like 2 seconds of screen.
Yeah. And it was pretty minor, and I think at the time you could get a PG for that. When it was on Disney Plus, they added CGI hair to cover her whole butt, and it looks just really obvious and distracting and bad. And Disney has been doing this for a long time. They have absolutely, like... removed and censored things from some of their movies. The original theatrical version of Aladdin had lyrics at the beginning that was
cut off your ear lyric.
Yeah. It was, frankly, it was quite racist. And people complained, as well they should have, and then Disney changed that for future releases. But apparently, if you watch Aladdin on Disney Plus, or I don't know if this is still the case, but it was for a while. They'll say, they have this disclaimer, the movie you're about to see has not been changed from its original version. Some of the things that are in this movie are not very...
Haven't aged well.
Haven't aged well, basically, is the whole thing. But it's not the original version. It's still the one that they censored.
Oh.
So we're still doing it. That's still not available. So there's a lot of different reasons why this happens. None of them are great, frankly. And it's really fucking annoying, and always try to call it out and always make a stink because, you know, when they're on digital, they're not concerned about updating that anytime soon. They're just going to leave that up there for as long as they can.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like there's going to be like a huge new, you know, coming back to Disney Plus, but right this time. They're not going to make, they're not going to do that anymore. So,
I'd be the jerk. It's like, you see those prompts on social media. Like, what would you do if you were in charge of the studio for a day?
Yeah.
Everyone says, oh, I'd green light these projects.
It's sure. I get it.
No, it's like, no, I'd take back all of those versions of Cinderella where they cleaned it up.
Oh yeah.
Like they reanimated the backgrounds and like reanimated the foregrounds and just completely changed the movie.
Well, they took out detail from the dresses.
Yeah.
In order to make it like kind of brighter and pop more, Cinderella's dress now has less detail in it.
Mm.
It looks worse.
I would restore that. I'd get back to the old ones.
Also, Star Wars is in public domain.
Yeah, right away.
Done. First thing, day one.
Star Wars is public domain.
Star Wars is public domain now. You ruined it. It's yours. Just do what you will. Let's see you try. All right. Done. Day one.
Anyway, here's another letter.
Right.
Some of these are like follow-ups to
other ones. Sure. That's okay.
This one comes from Todd. Hello, Todd.
Hi, there you
go. Hello, gentlemen and cats. The cats are over there. They're napping happily.
Oh, they're snoozing. They're so cute. Oh, I woke them up. Sorry, guys.
Dear gentlemen and cats, as Whitney was describing juror number two, all I could think of was about a Far Side cartoon by Gary Larson that had already been taking up too much time in my brain, where a cow stands up in the jury box and proclaims that they did it. I've been overthinking this cartoon for months. The defendant is innocent, though falsely accused. The guilty party somehow made it onto the jury, and they are a cow. It boggles my mind, and now I find out that not only is there a movie about this very subject, but is very distinctly lacking any cows. What is even going on here? Sincerely, Todd. P.S. Bibbs, The Burbs isn't a very good movie. It's more annoying than it's worth.
I disagree with that very much. Burbs.
But yeah, and they even included the strip. So
oh, which one?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. All right. I confess. I did it. Yes, that's right. The cow. Ha ha ha. And I feel great. That was a good one. The one I was thinking... you were referencing, and I realize now it is a different setup. The cow is actually on the witness stand, and the lawyer is interrogating the cow, and the dialogue caption is, "Look, we know how you did it. How is no longer the question. What we want to know now is why. Why now, brown cow?" And that is a great joke. That is a really great joke.
It's like, The Far Side informed my sense of humor in ways I can barely begin to describe.
Yeah.
I do remember one where a crocodile was on the stand in a courtroom.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it's
like,
of course I did it
in cold blood.
Of course I did it in cold blood, you idiot. I'm a reptile. That kind of stuff.
That one had to be censored. Because originally he said, "Of course I did it in cold blood, you dork." And then the people complained and said, "Dork means penis." So you're not allowed to have that.
It wasn't censored, but if you got that from the Prehistory of the Far Side book.
Oh, okay. But they did change it, though.
Gary Larson changed it himself.
And my point is this.
He did a draft where he called him a nerd and also called him a dork. And he decided idiot was funnier.
Oh, okay. I remember that wrong. My bad.
All right.
Yeah. They did censor the Far Side a few times. Like, they did, like, say, you can't release this strip.
Yeah.
Because some of them were too morbid.
There was one that eventually ran, and like he actually made it to the final draft and submitted it to newspapers, and they said no. And it was a snake that was unable to escape a baby's crib because of the bulge in its body.
I mean, that's pretty dark, to be fair. I appreciate you're just sitting there with your morning coffee, and you just go do a spit take. Wow. Okay, what are you up to, Mark Trail? You gonna catch that snake?
Yeah, anything that had like people barfing while there's food was always got in trouble with like the syndicating newspaper strips.
I just want to say, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again, until the Far Side cows come home. I am still amazed that we got from the year 2000 to the year 2020 without Will Ferrell starring in a comedy version of Mark Trail. Doesn't that feel like it writes itself?
You'd think so, and they're tapping into all kinds of obscure properties. Right? You know, they're remaking, like, Jacob's Ladder and stuff.
I mean, that's not bad. But, like, he was in a Land of the Lost movie.
There you go.
No one asked. Even the people who were fans of it. But that show was on, like, the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
Like, it was not a hot property. No one was begging for it. Mm. But they did it anyway. So I just feel like Mark Trail, and even if you don't know Mark Trail, just funny things happen to a forest ranger who takes himself super seriously.
Mm.
Done. Writes itself.
I would like that movie for Mark Trail to be really capable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like Ace Ventura.
Yeah, he's kind of a goofy, outsized character, but he's actually good at what he does. I like that better.
I want to see dueling Mark Trail movies. So there's one with Will Ferrell, but then there's one with Jason Statham. like terrorists take over the park or whatever, and like if you don't give us all of the crude oil in this park, the squirrels get it. then Jason Statham says something about forests. Only you can prevent forest dyers. Which, I mean, that's not great, but you know, I used up all my good material with that game earlier.
I guess so.
All right, but thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for joining us. If you want to talk to us anything in this podcast, our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Whitney, what is our P.O. Box?
Send us a fiscal letter to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yes, and we're on social media. I am off Twitter. I am not, I have not removed my account because I have enough followers that I don't want, like, someone to just grab it and make it weird. But I am not posting there anymore, except maybe an occasional article link. I am on Blue Sky now. That's where I am.
Yeah, we're on Blue Sky. I same deal with me. Not interacting with my Twitter account anymore.
It just feels like a cesspool. Like
it's worse than 4chan these days.
It's gotten
like
really bad.
So much hate and stress.
Every once in a while, I accidentally look at Twitter and like for a second, I'm like, oh my God, this is why I left. I look at like two posts and I'm gone. Like everything is just so angry and bitter and condescending and just mean in a way that goes beyond, oh, that's the internet, and is just a fucking terrible place to be. Blue Sky, on the other hand, is great, and I highly recommend signing up for it if you like social media and want to be on it. I'm enjoying it. It is a much more positive experience over there, even when we do talk about serious things. So that's where I am on social media now. Not on Twitter. But you can find me and Whitney. It's at our names. You can find us very easily. And also Critically Acclaimed has an account on Blue Sky as well, at Critic Acclaim, because it's still too long. I don't it still sucks, but all right. That's a thing to do. Anyway, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for joining us. And then we say goodbye with the words, sincerely yours, Bibbs and Whitney.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.